welcome to the Big Four Transparency Podcast. I'm joined today by Wade Runge, the director at Porty Brown, and someone I also have met recently at the Bridging the Gap conference. Thanks for joining me on the pod, Wade.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Dom.
Yeah, my pleasure. We had a conversation kind of before this about your career, and you have had a very interesting career path. So would you be able to just kind of quickly walk us through your career to date and you know, how you ended up kind of where you are today?
Sure. When I started, I did not want to go into public accounting. I was going to work at a hospital, do hospital accounting for my entire career. And it just so happened that the accounting manager thought that taking the CPA exam would further her career. And I had recently graduated. So she asked me if I would study with her, you know, and take the exam with her. And I did. And ended up passing it the first time. I always tell people the reason for that is because I got married a month after the exam. And if I hadn't passed it, taking it the first time, because I was exempted from all the wedding planning, that I would never hear the end of it. You know?
Oh, yeah. You'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So passed the exam and then decided, you know, maybe public accounting might not be too bad. Chose a small firm that was a ways away, hard for me to get to, but it was one that I was able to get a job at. And at the end of the 3-month probationary period, for various different reasons, I decided I didn't want to stay there. And so I looked at the phone book and found a place that was, you know, closer to where I was living at the time. And started to work there. And I ended up working for a guy named Dave Bungie, which I've told the story, and I'm not going to tell it here, about how a Bungie and a Runge came to work together, you know. But so I started working for Dave in December of 1987. And a few years later, we were building our house. So I actually left public accounting, went back to the hospital that I was at while we were building our house. And Dave, I was working per diem for Dave through a tax season shortly after we built our house. And in that fall, Dave asked me if I would be willing to come on as a minority partner in the firm. He had a couple of other options he was evaluating, and this one was probably the lesser of the three evils, I suppose, because he would be able to remain in control of the firm that way. And so I did. I was not even 30 yet, and I was a minority partner in a small accounting firm. Great. Except for about the first 5 years, I didn't have a freaking clue what I was doing, you know. But it was a great experience for me. He was tremendous. Dave was tremendous for my career. He and I were partners for 24 years. And it was about the time he was getting ready to retire. We had brought on a third partner, and at that point, and we sat down at our annual partners retreat, and he said, "Okay, guys, 5 years from now, I'm going to be out." And we went, "Oh, expletive deleted! How are we going to do this? We're going to have to replace his billings. We're going to have to, you know, he was the rainmaker for the firm. We're going to have to, you know, do all of that stuff." And he mentioned that Porty Brown had expressed some interest in talking to us about acquiring us. And so we said, "All right, fine. You know, let's look at that. Let's do that." And that was in August of 2016. And by October 31st of that year, we had completed that merger.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Okay. So it was a very short period of time to go through there. So we came on with Porty and have been working there as a director. At Porty Brown, director is somebody that was a partner in a previous firm and is not a partner in the current, you know, at Porty, mm-hmm. which was fine with me. I mean, I was, you know, not quite ready to retire, but I knew I was kind of on the backside of my career. And so the fact that I wasn't going to be a partner at Porty was perfectly fine. So
interesting.
Yeah. And that was what, almost 8-9 years ago now.
So. Yeah. So there's lots that I want to dig into there. The first thing being, how do you think that receiving equity so early in your career ended up shaping your career? And like, how did that influence your experience at that firm?
Yeah. Well, I guess I would say, first of all, it kept me in public accounting. You know, it was one of those things that, for me, it was a security thing, you know. Like I said, I didn't have a freaking clue what I was doing the first couple of years as a partner. I knew what I was doing from an accounting standpoint, you know, but, you know, had no idea. And it provided me a bit of a security blanket that I knew I couldn't just be fired one day, you know? And so, but beyond that, it really allowed me, I think, to learn a lot of different aspects of the accounting profession. Yeah. I think that's really served me well. I've been able to utilize that when talking to clients, because I've been part of management of a firm. You know, I've been part of management of a company, have, you know, worked in helping shape the direction of the company, even though I was, I was purely a minority shareholder. You know, we all did things collaboratively. You know, Dave was very responsive to my opinion on things. So, you know, I got to learn a lot of different areas that, somebody that goes into Big Four, I assume, because I've never been in Big Four, that, you know, I wasn't stuck doing bank recs for 6 months. You know, I was doing all sorts of things even before I became a partner. I was doing a bunch of other stuff, but after becoming a partner, I learned a lot about the management of a business and an accounting firm. I think that's really been good for me.
Yeah. And I think at that point you end up with like a vested interest in the firm's performance, right? So instead of, you know, whatever, you find yourself spending too much time on like administrative tasks, instead of just being like, hey, why won't you hire me an admin assistant or like an executive assistant or something? It actually becomes a real thought process of, okay, can I get more done profitably using an executive assistant, handing off some of this work, and then learning to leverage my time a little bit better, right? I think it completely changes the dynamic of some of those asks. For what it's worth, I wholeheartedly think that the answer to that question is often yes, but I think it's a little bit difficult to do. But, you know, I think that entirely changes the dynamic. And for myself, like I found myself getting really frustrated by a lot of things where even if I just had some sort of like stock option plan, and I was at a Big Four firm, so at that point, it kind of feels too big to be necessarily influenced by my individual actions. But I do think that I would have viewed a lot of things differently as an employee there. So,
I think another thing that was different about, we were a small firm, right? We had no more, I think at our largest, we had 9 or 10 employees total, including us. And we had, 3 offices. I always say 3.5 because Dave had a vacation home up in southern Wisconsin. We're in northern Illinois. And so, you know, we had an office up there that he would go to when he would go to his condo. So that was kind of the half office that we had. And so I basically managed one of the offices. You know, and we didn't have a ton of staff, so I had to figure out ways to do it on my own. You know, there were lots of times where I was the only one in the office, so I was having to do it all. But to your point about, you know, geez, could I do more if I had an admin? Yeah, perhaps, but there's the cost of that and, you know, those types of things. So, it's always a balancing act for sure. Especially with a very small firm. But we made it work. It worked just fine for us.
Interesting. And you mentioned earlier when we were speaking how one of the biggest learning curves when you move from this small private practice to Porty Brown was that your billing rate increased very substantially all of a sudden to your clients, right?
Yep.
So to avoid write-offs, you kind of had to learn how to leverage your time a little bit more. And I'm curious to know, like, what some of those learnings or like what some of those concrete things that you had to do differently were.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm still trying to figure out how to avoid write-offs. You know, because my client base was relatively small compared to the average client here at 40 Brown. So, but to answer your question, it was a lot more in delegation. You know, I used to always say, hey, I have people now. You know, I didn't have to do it all myself, which is great because there we now have experts in things that I would have to have learned how to do on my own, you know, at our former firm. But the downside of that is I had to let go. I had to delegate things. And it was tough for me. It was tough for my clients because for 20 some years, I was the guy, you know, I was doing most everything. And I'm not that anymore. And so it's a matter of getting them used to that and getting me used to it too. Because, you know, old dogs, new tricks, you know. So it's been a learning curve trying to get to that, and I'm still working on it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. A little bit of a tangent here, but I actually noticed today when I was, you know, pulling where you had worked and some information like that, I noticed that you were Wade Runge, CPA, CVA. That's not a designation that we see a ton, but I had actually a number of years ago, I think it's a CBV here in Canada, but I had looked into valuations as a very interesting cross designation. I just kind of never made the jump. So I would love to hear how having that cross designation has served you throughout your career.
Sure. I think that was one of the things that made the small firm that we were at unique. I was the valuation guy, certified valuation analyst. One of the other partners, was a tax guy. So he was very big into tax and state tax and things like that. And our managing partner was very big into advisory, business advisory, cash flow, business, you know, increasing business value, things like that. So, mm-hmm. We always talked about it as a three-legged stool. I think that's one of the things that actually drew 4D to us was the fact that we had those. That's kind of how we were developing our firm, was looking at those things. I think one of the other things about valuation in and of itself is it's advisory to a certain extent. At least that's the fun part of it. Is the advisory piece of it. So it's utilizing accounting and tax and those things that we do every day, but it's then also being able to say, how can we better increase the value of your company? Or how can we, what are some of the things that we can do to make you more attractive to a potential buyer? You know, those types of things. So there's a lot to it rather than just the you know, calculation of value. And one of the things that you know, any evaluator will tell you is that it's both science and art, because there's a lot of areas in there that are subjective. And so you learn to develop those opinions and back those opinions, you know? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I can't stand testifying. I don't like doing it. I don't want to do it. And so from that standpoint, I am not the big, you know, expert witness type person, but you still have to be willing to do that if you have to. You know, most of the valuations we do are tax related. And so, you know, those could be end up in tax court at some point. Maybe I do have to testify somewhere, but I don't do divorce valuations and things because I just don't like testifying.
Yeah. No, that's nice that you get to choose, right? And that because you're not only a CVA, you're CPA as well, you can probably sort of really pick and choose and carve out the areas of that you find interesting.
Yeah.
Was that useful to yourself / your partners during the sale of your own firm? Like, was that able to help you sort of shape some of your actions around the sale of your own firm?
A little bit. I think that with that, it was, we were being acquired, right? So, yeah. So we didn't have a ton of say in that. And accounting firms have pretty set rules of thumb for what those, you know, what the sale prices of things are. But I would say leading up to it, you know, trying to look and make sure that we're doing things as best we could to, you know, to make us more saleable. You know, it did help from that standpoint. But as I said, it was a really short period of time, in the negotiation, you know, so,
yeah.
And honestly, there was very little we had to negotiate out with 40 Brown. They gave us a really nice offer to start with, and it went very smoothly. So
nice. And I'm sure that creates a lot of goodwill when you're then working there afterwards, right?
Yep.
So that's probably the right move to take for them. What are those rules of thumbs like kind of nowadays for the sale of a firm? I'm not sure if you're still on top of that, but I'm always curious to hear.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm on top of it now. I don't know that they've changed dramatically. You know, there might be others out there that might differ, you know, but it seems to me that, you know, they're all based upon a multiple of revenue, which is different than most businesses, right? You don't usually sell a firm or buy a company based upon a multiple of revenue. But they're generally, I don't know, between, you know, 0.95 and 1.25. You know, maybe more or less depending upon the specific services that you offer, how much of it is, you know, not commodity based, how much of it is advisory based, tends to increase that value a little bit more. And then there's, you know, so there's fair market value and then there's synergistic value, right? So if you've got some of those things, you know, and that's why the multiples could be much higher, not much higher, could be higher. You know, there might be certain things that a particular acquiring firm is just absolutely looking to get into that they don't currently offer that the firm that's being acquired has, you know. So there are any number of synergies that can affect that. But I would say that, you know, that's a general range.
Okay, interesting.
There may be comments that you'll get from this podcast that'll tell you different.
No, I like to ask different people's opinions and stuff like that. It definitely does converge around the like 1 to 1.5, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
But different people have different takes and, you know, naturally people gravitate to what they know. So a lot of people will go, oh, it depends on the tech enablement, but like they're a super large advocate for tech enablement at firms, right? So it's like everyone views it from their own lens and it's not even done intentionally. I think it's just because that's what you're so focused on, that's what you think, right? So
right.
I really like to hear it from as many people as possible. I find that very interesting. So shifting gears a little bit to Porty Brown itself, it does not take a ton of Googling until you start to come across one of the many awards that they've won in the last little while, most of them around being the best place to work in Illinois or just in general on Accounting Today. I think it was one of the best places to work for. I'm curious what you think that Porty Brown does differently that sort of sets it apart from other accounting firms from the employee perspective.
I think a lot of it has to do, and by the way, Porty Brown, number one in the state of Illinois, best place to work this year. I need to plug that for our marketing department. I think, you know, a lot of that has to do with just how we treat our employees, you know, how the employees are, you know, and I keep saying are, right? Like I'm one of the owners and I'm not, you know, but that's kind of the way it feels, you know? And I remember that first coming in to the firm, you know, the entire partner group was nothing but welcoming, to me, you know, and my partners and the others in the firm, you know, and that's, I think, what we try to be. You know, some of it comes down to some of the more measurable things. You know, compensation is always part of the issue. Benefits is always part of the issue. You know, but I think overall, it really comes down to how you treat your people, you know, and I think that Porty does an exceptional job of that. You know, it's kept me in public accounting, you know. Because tax season, I can't stand tax. I really can't. And, you know, but I get to work with these people. I get to, you know, to share the experiences with them. And the partners here are phenomenal in the way that they treat us. So, you know, it's one of those areas. I mean, we may talk about this more, but I'm looking to retire in the not too distant future. My daughter and son-in-law and my grandchildren live out in the Seattle area. And so my wife and I are looking to move from the Chicago area to the Seattle area. And, as part of that, I am likely going to be working remote for Porty Brown living in Seattle area. Even though, our client base is generally in the Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin region. But I mean, Porty has an employee that lives in Hawaii, and she works remote. So I think it's things like that, that people look at and the employees and the best places to work surveys that come out, or that I should say the best places to work awards are largely driven. I don't know what percentage, but are largely driven by employee surveys that are done.
Yeah.
And, I think it's a testament to, I'm not the only one here that feels that way, obviously, that there's, that's the prevailing thought here at the firm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to see the places that are able to like maintain that as a scale as well, right? Because I think, you know, when it's just your firm and you launch this thing and you're dedicated to wanting to keep people happier, I won't say that's easy to do because obviously it's not. Like it's a lot of effort no matter what. But I think doing that at scale once you have hundreds of employees, I think is a little bit different. And that's why like I'm always curious to know like how did that get preserved by a certain place. But it really does seem like kind of like a widespread attitude and decision to put employees first. Another one of the very unique things I heard about was around like customer interactions. So you had mentioned at one point, and please like correct me if I'm off on some of these details, but basically that like staff are like going to clients a lot to get sign off on documents and like even some of the tax work and stuff like that, right?
We do the work. We do the accounting work as whenever possible. We do the accounting work at the client's place of business. That's been a longstanding tradition. The firm is 70 some years old. I don't exactly, you know, I should know that, probably, but it's it's over 70. It's getting close to 75, I believe. And that was started with James Porty when he first started the firm. He would take his adding machine and his green bar paper, and he would go out to the client's offices. And that's been a hallmark of the firm. To us, it's more efficient doing that. You can build the time frame in. You've set that time aside with the client's bookkeeper or the client themselves, whoever it is that you need to do that. And so you go out there, you do the accounting work, you have a question, you ask them. You need a piece of paper that's got something there, you ask them, they give it to you, you look at it, and you copy it or whatever you need to do. But you get the answer right away. And I believe it's way more efficient than even the way that our firm used to do it, which was everybody brought everything in. And, we had questions. We'd set up our list of questions and we'd email the client or call the client and maybe they were there, maybe they weren't. Then you had to wait for them to get back to you. And, it tended to delay things. You had to pick things up more often. And, doing it this way, the goal doesn't always happen, but the goal is to get the accounting ready for the partner to review it before you leave the office, before you leave, the client's office. And as part of that, the accountant kind of sets up the the tax preparation, you know, so mm-hmm. they will make sure that the we're using CCH's system, so they're integrated, so we can integrate from the trial balance into the tax return. And so for smaller yeah. non-audit and review clients, you know, especially for smaller ones, we're able to go and the idea is we're able to input the trial balance into the tax return, balance the return, you know, and get some of those things done before we even leave the client's office.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting to me with that is, like, I feel like you, as the preparer, are a lot more bought into the client and the outcomes that there are, right? Like, it's very easy to feel really isolated and removed from the outcomes that you're generating when you're just at home all day in your home office, or even in a corporate office for the firm. So this is very unique. I'm sure some people probably view that as an obstacle, going, I don't want to be spending my days driving around all over the place. But at the same time, I think it is kind of interesting because you're a lot more connected to the work you're doing and you get to meet a lot of the people
yep.
that you otherwise wouldn't. So that's unique. I'm like kind of torn on it. I, you know, a big part of me loves it. And then a small part of me goes like, it's a lot of traffic maybe, but I find that very, very interesting and unique.
Yeah. I will say this, it gives even younger staff. Now, first years don't really go out to clients. We do have plenty of them that are in-house, yeah. you know, in-house clients that for whatever reason, we can't, the client doesn't have a place where we could go or, you know, they just don't yeah. want to do it that way or whatever. So there are plenty of in-house ones that first years work on. But that also gets our younger staff out to the client in real world situations, answering mm-hmm. questions from the client, you know, getting feedback and, you know, learning that. That small firm I referenced that I worked for before working with Dave, mm-hmm. we were told under no circumstances are you to answer a client's question. Even yeah. if you know the answer, the most, you know, you know it dead on, you know the answer. The most we ever want you to say is, well, you should, you know, this is what I believe it is, but you need to ask the, you know, the manager or the partner for that. And I always mm-hmm. thought that was ridiculous. You know, we want to empower the younger staff. Now, we don't want them out there, you know, given, you know, patently wrong answers. But, yeah. but you know, and the idea is if you don't know the answer, say you don't know the answer, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, because there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know the answer, but I know where I will find out and I will let you know. Nothing yeah. wrong with that at all. And I think that going out and being with clients helps to foster that. You know, we also have young staff presenting at our monthly staff meeting on a regular basis. So they have to get up in front of the firm. Now a lot of them are done virtually, so it's a little easier, but you know, but it was, you know, there was a time where virtually every young staff person had to get up in front of the entire staff in the room that we were in and give a presentation. And so you learn, I think that's a good thing. We all learn to talk to people. Because yeah. I think that's one of the things that they don't teach enough in accounting in classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that there's these like little sneaky things that you learn. Like you mentioned previously when we were talking casually that you had kind of a background in performing. And I did too. And it's crazy to say, but like this background helped me be very, very good at like case competitions in university. And then that helped me stand out and kind of get whatever job I wanted out of university and win a bunch of scholarship money and stuff like that. And I do think that that's something that a lot of places are not developing. And the way that you communicate and hold yourself around a client is going to really help you further down your career, right? I think it matters a little bit less as a staff, but it's a good time to start learning this because who knows, maybe you want to go out on your own and you have to be able to carry yourself with confidence and be able to sell to this client, or just in general in your communications, like you want you know, if you actually really know the answer, you want to deliver it in a way where the client understands that you truly know this, not where they're like,
right,
maybe I should take that with a grain of salt. Right. So, no, I really like that. I think that developing that is truly, truly important.
Well, and at Porty as well, everybody has a sales mentality, you know. Mm-hmm. Porty has a very generous commission structure for bringing in new clients. And that's for anybody, you know, from admin to partners, you know, not mm-hmm. partners are more expected than that, but, you know, admin, first year staff, new staff, whoever. Yeah. And, you know, I wish that I had had more opportunity as a young staff person to go out and do that. You know, I had yeah. a fair amount of it, but it was usually in our office. You know, clients would come in to meet with me. And I think I could have learned a lot more about real world situations and dealing with conflict and, you know, all of those other things, you know, just getting confidence in talking to people if I had been doing it more.
Yeah. I think having a built-in commission plan would have kept me in public accounting. that's what I was passionate about. And our only evaluation metric, and again, it's hard to do at a firm that big, I understand, mm-hmm. was the number of billable hours. So not even revenue, right? Like where I was able to kind of be on a lot of like higher revenue files, but it was like, no, it was literally just the hours. And that frustrated me to no end. And so that was a big part of calling it quits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so before I let you go, I also typically like to ask a question on like your sort of thoughts on the industry. And I think for you, given your unique experience with getting equity as like a minority partner so young at an accounting firm, I think you're in a really good position to answer this. But what are your thoughts on the people experimenting with different firm models, some of which now create the opportunity to create employee stock option plans, right? Where employees as early as staff potentially would have the opportunity to get equity in either a small or a large firm, kind of regardless. How do you think that will impact like the employee experience or, you know, retention or just how they feel about their firm in general?
Yeah, well, I can tell you how it affected me. And it was tremendously positive. You know, now it wasn't just that I had equity, right? I was part of the management team, you know, because we were a mm-hmm. very small firm. But even in a larger firm, if you had real equity or pseudo equity, I mean, there's you know, there are ways to do phantom stock plans and things like that. And I'm not sure that that's really in an accounting firm that it works that way, you know. Mm-hmm. And I haven't worked with any or haven't heard of any ESOP accounting firms, you know, per se. But I think that from the standpoint of getting some equity, you do start to think like an owner, you know. So mm-hmm. you do start to care a little bit more, not just about what you're doing, but how that affects the greater good of the firm. And mm-hmm. I think that can be nothing but positive. I think that the more people that you get thinking that way, the more positive it is for whatever company you're talking about, whether it's an accounting firm, a manufacturing company, whatever, it doesn't matter. I think the more people that think and act and have ownership, you know, real or you know, pseudo ownership or just even implied, the more that they think that way, the more that every employee that has that is going to think about the better good or the greater good of the company that they work for. And that's got to be a positive thing.
Yeah. Very well said. I agree 100% with what you're saying there. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Wade. Thank you for sharing your story and a little bit about what makes Porty Brown unique. I love kind of the insights that we're able to get from some of that. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks. Thank you again for for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun.